This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey, it's Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 359. I'm Steve Raker here with Andrew the LA Rabbit and Phil and Kevin Worldwind X.
Awesome. I don't know if I've read enough comics here because I've been painting all these Lego minifigures. I like got back into the habit.
Repainting the ones that you scratched up, or are you making custom ones?
Custom ones. Like, I think it started like back in the day when I had like an X-Men Gideon and I repainted him into an Iron Fist.
I used to make custom Hero Clicks by taking different parts to my doubles and everything and then painting them. And I used to paint miniatures too.
So I did like some mini mates of like a living tribunal. Oh. And then a few years after that, it was like the small mini mates. I did like a mole man, and I gave him like a toothpick for like a cane.
Are you posting these on the forums?
I've been tweeting some out, and now I'm on the Valiant where I'm like mixing and matching Legos. I'm going to the store and going, that piece would be cool, or.
Exo Manowar would be easy, no?
I don't know. I kind of need, like, I don't know if I have...
Because wouldn't, like, an Iron Man, like, maybe part of an Iron Man, and then just find a head or something that works with him?
You could turn Mr. Sinister into Bloodshot.
A life preserver or something, like some kind of jacket that could cover his jacket. But so far, I, like, did the Eternal Warrior, Divinity, which, actually, it was funny... Like, I actually just took some guy that was, like, underwater. And I'm like, he had some crazy apparatus and, like, helmet. So I'm like, oh, that'll work as a spacesuit. And then I have, I haven't shown it yet, but I didn't finish Archer yet. But I have Armstrong, and I have him with his hat and sort of, like, hobbit gear and everything. Because, you know, he's just sort of, like, old-fashioned suspenders and everything. And then I have, like, a Bloodshot. And it's kind of hilarious. I learned this when I did some powers customs before, you know, of Walker and Dina, where Walker had, like a tie wrap, and you tie it at the back, but it looks like he has those straps, you know, like cops to hold their guns. So I used that again, and I'm, like, using that on Bloodshot. But he has, like, a yellow head, because, you know, like, Lego, everyone's, like, yellow. But he's supposed to have white skin, so I'm thinking of just painting it over, because I'm like, I don't, even though it's Lego yellow and everyone's like,
you
yellow,
have to paint
I'm just
it.
Like,
you have to paint it.
Bugs me. Yeah, so that's my crazy expedition. And then I got one of the new guys from like series 12 or 13, and was like a Judas Priest, like band member. But he had sort of like these bands on his arms that were like spikes and everything and studs, and I'm like, you know, that would probably work pretty well on an Eternal Warrior. So I'm just, like, I'm asking all these pieces, looking what I have, and I'm like, oh, this would work pretty well. Like, there's some Star Wars stuff where I'm, like, going to do a Master Dark, but I'm going to use a head from, like, is it the Emperor or Darth Vader or something like that? Because I'm like, oh, that looks
pretty. Yeah, the Emperor would work. It's a little wrinkly, though.
But... So that's what I've been doing.
Welcome to Toy Noise.
We're the podcast sponsored by nobody, but we're part of the Deliberate Noise Network, along with the other podcasts in the comic book noise family of podcasts, like Marvel Noise, which is the other podcast we do where we talk about the Marvel books. And you can find us on Indie Comic Book Noise, where you can get old episodes and a link to the forum. That's part of the 11 o'clock comic forums. And we have a Facebook page, and there you can make comments and see some art about the books that we're talking about, as long as get our Twitter handles, which we have along the banner of that Facebook page. So come by and visit and communicate with us if you would like. What books you been reading, gang?
I went to WonderCon, which was this weekend over Easter. Well... Not this weekend, obviously, because then I would be talking in the future. But, I mean, the weekend that just happened.
I'm confused. No, just kidding.
It might be the weekend after the weekend, though. By the time this comes out, this is confusing.
So, temporal questions aside, it's tough for me to figure out how everything works in this modern world. But I turned around the corner and saw something called a zombie outlaw. And I was like, wait, is that that thing Steve talked about? So I bought an issue of Zombie Outlaw. Turns out, I don't think it's the thing Steve talked about on a former issue.
It wasn't Zeke Deadwood? No.
This was Zombie Outlaw, and I'm like, oh man, Steve talked about some kind of, what was it called? Zombie Sheriff or something?
Zombie Lawman. Zeke Zombie Deadwood, Lawman. Zombie Lawman.
Well, I found his counterpart title, Zombie Outlaw. So I was like, you guys on comics? After I bought it, I was like, hey, are you guys on Comixology? He's like, we just submitted. I'm like, I don't think that's the thing Steve reviewed, but what the heck, you know? I take it, even comics that sound like comics that Steve talked about have to be good. So Brian J. Apodaca is the writer and artist B. Paul Jordan. Those are the only credits listed, so I'm going to assume that one of them, you know, they did the coloring and lettering and everything as well, too. So this one is set contemporaneously at a school, and this one character has a crush on another one, and his friend goes to help him out. So they go to the library, and that's when they find out about this zombie outlaw, and they end up, you know, it's the sort of concurrent story of that character and this character, and then he goes down and they discover that the character's real. You know, they find the tomb underneath the school, and the zombie takes over and curses the kid and turns him into, so it's kind of, while it says zombie, he kind of is like a mummy style zombie. Mm-hmm. So, but he's like a big muscular kind of one, and he's got like the cowboy hat with the skull on it over his head. And it's done in that sort of exaggerated, like most of the characters' eyes are the reverse. So they have black eyes with white pupils and kind of like cartoonishly oversized forearms, but really short biceps and like big sausagey fingers and everything. You know, that kind of exaggerated vibe you're going for. But yeah, the reverse black white eyes are always interesting because it gives it kind of a creepy feel, but it's not super creepy in any way. You know, I mean, I guess it's a little bit, but the art style undermines the creepiness of it. But they're, like I said, students at Irvine State University. And then I skipped number two, but I did buy number three because number three is a flip book. And the flip book, well, first of all, the cover number three was fan art, and it's a total parody of the first issue of Vision. You know, it's all in the red outline, and he's coming out of the pink, the fog.
Yeah.
So why I got it was the flip book, the other side of the flip book, it's the same writer, but the artist Casper Wingard, Wijngaard, next man up, and it's the lead character, has a little bunny that she carries around with her, a real bunny.
Hmm.
So I had to buy it. And it's some, and it's one of those teaser ones where she's some sort of hero and this mysterious guy shows up and it's like, we found you, and then takes her to this boardroom where it's this group of heroes and she's like, how did you find me? And that's when we find out she was done in by this other woman, and we don't know their relationship or anything, but it was a good teaser episode. I like the art, and she has a little bunny that she travels with. You guys know how I feel about comic books that feature bunnies.
You must buy them.
Atomic Rabbit.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say I must buy them, but I do buy them. So anyways, the lesson of the story is, man, I need to pay more attention to the show.
But you didn't have any other adventures?
Oh, I had some, you know, I stumbled around and had good times and went to, it's right by Disneyland, so lured a bunch of my friends unsuspectingly over for a character breakfast, which for those of you that don't know, you eat breakfast at the hotel, but all the character, Mickey Mouse shows up and Stitch and everything. So we took a lot of silly photos, and I always go to the IDW Artist Edition panel, and have fun at that. The only a big announcement was they're doing another Q-Bert Tarzan book.
Oh. So no Ditko yet.
No Ditko yet. Someone else asked that question. And Dunbeer gave the very polite, but my subtext is I don't think that's ever going to fucking... I don't think, unless it showed up already wrapped and the proofs were done on his desk, he might deign to print it. But even then, I'm not sure he would or not. But he's always very political. You know, like, he's not like, fuck that guy. But, you know, we've all been around the block.
Yeah, I've seen him speak before, yeah.
So, yeah, I get the feeling, fuck that guy is his general demeanor on it. But it's always fun just to see what's coming out. And just the volume of them, they've really ramped it up. And they talked about how they got, like, sometimes there's printing issues because of the unusual size and the gatefolds or when they got color or things like that. So it makes me laugh that they've got they just have all this because of the strike, it got delayed. So a bunch came in at once, which is why you're seeing this flurry of them. So sometimes the timing, they can't really space out. Oh, they're doing all the Carl Barks. All the Don Rosa Life and Times Scrooge books. They're going to do three of them, which should be all of it. So for those of you that are big Duck fans, I've read some of it, but it never really got my motor running. But you can get you'll be able to get the full boat, theoretically, because I guess Rosa kept all his stuff.
Wild. He's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. From everything, even the stories there and everything, a really nice, you know, story of a fan turned pro, you know, that was really into the stuff and just a good guy. It's just that I don't know. I don't know why it never got to me.
Way back in Amazing Heroes, remember that old fanzine in the 80s and into the 90s? Amazing Heroes?
Yeah, yeah.
It started out magazine size, then it went to comic book size, and they used to have their big previews and season, you know, look-aheads and all that. But Don Rosa used to have a one-page strip in there where he used to look at, like, old covers that were similar and things like that. It was clever.
So, did I talk to any fancy people? I wondered. Artist Alley picked up a few more things. It was just kind of an odd show. They had big names, but it felt like nobody that I was running down to be like, okay, you know, there was no guilt. I'm thinking of recent times, like when Chris Claremont, I wanted to get him to sign a book, or Gilbert Shelton, or places, people like that. There was nobody there, but I mean, there was good talent, you know. I spent a little time at the Valiant booth, and Fred Van Lente was there and a bunch of other people. Oh, I went to a very cool colorist panel where they talked about color theory. So I finally got someone to explain some about color theory and a really good explanation of flattening.
I was wondering about that, yeah.
Because, you know, they always talk about that stuff, and they even when they pseudo-explain it, I don't really understand it. So they did a good job because they brought one of their flatteners up. I guess that's what you call them. And he talked about how he did his flattening. It was just interesting to sort of see models and people ask questions and everything. I mean, it got a little over my head at times, but I think I was there for most of it, you know?
Does Van Lente still recognize you, or is he to the point now where he's denying ever...
he recognizes me. I mean, you know, or at least I'm pretends teasing. To, which is really all I ask for in life, is to be pretended to be recognized. That works as an adequate substitute. And then there's always a really fun cosplay, especially around Easter. There's always somebody dressed up like Jesus. There's a fountain out front, so they can do a lot of walking on the water gags and everything.
Is there a lot of bunnies, a lot of rabbits?
Yeah, yeah, a fair amount of rabbit related. I talked about that Bunny Man comic. He was there again. So we talked to him because my wife liked that comic too. He didn't have anything new, but he had his book there. And then lots of people do rabbit twists on their character. Like there's the guy that does Wolverine, but he puts carrots for claws and bunny ears on. And some stormtroopers had bunny ears on. All that type of stuff. So that's how I always like to see that.
Yeah, it's like your season.
Yeah, the season of the bunny. And then like some big zombie bunny types. And there was a scarecrow bunny and various permutations in that manner. I didn't go to the big Image Comics panel that had Kirkman on it. And it is interesting how he still, like, he's the king of, like, he's made it, right? But he still has a, likes to slam Marvel and DC when he gets the chance. And it just seems kind of weird. Like, dude, you're at the top of the mountain. Because, you know, almost everyone else on the panel, as people that, Remender was on it, who still does work, or Brubaker, who recently was doing, you know what I mean? So it's a lot of people that were recently associated. And it just, I mean, look, it's done him right. It just seems kind of weird that there's a dude that everything pretty much turned up right. I don't know. I wonder if Marvel or DC or someone pooped on him.
Yeah, it just seems weird that if there's someone else on the panel that's currently working at Marvel, like he's like if he was like, all those Marvel books suck, and then the guy's like looking across the, I'm writing some of those books, like.
Well, I don't think he, you know, Remender doesn't care.
No, Kurt, but it's just, you know, kind of funny.
It is, and it just felt so, like I said, for me, it just felt out of touch because, like, I don't know. I wonder if they did something, they slammed him or they go after him or something. Because it just felt way more, like I said, dude, you're at the top of the mountain. You have that, The Walking Dead is a moneymaker in comics and TV. You do novels, like, you're tripping over success. You're the most famous comic book dude far and away, probably, this side of Stan Lee. Like, what more could you want, you know?
Andrew, you talked a couple episodes about The Skies of Fire.
Sure.
An oversized...
Oh, yeah, those guys, and they were there, too. Yeah.
That was really good. It's on Comixology now, and I picked it up and checked it out, and, you know, obviously a lot smaller looking at it on a tablet, but I'm not sure how long the oversized hardcover was, but they give you 35 pages as a first issue here. Vincenzo Ferrerio and Ray Chow. Flying airships, pirates, destruction, the authorities and chase and all that. I thought it was really good. Really well colored, really well rendered, and really got you into that airship steampunky world.
Yeah. Did it have all the, like, the fake newspaper in the back and all that type of stuff?
It had some back matter stuff, yeah.
Yeah. The oversize is really fun. I'm glad you liked it. It's always a crapshoot getting recommendations from those indie noise guys.
And that made me want to check out a book from last year in 2014 called Rum Row that I also had on Comixology. And that's written by Andrew Maxwell with art by Michelle Bandini. And this is almost 40 pages or so. And it is like, it's also an airship steampunky type world. It's in the time of Prohibition, actually. So it's not quite so steampunky, but it is all airship filled with air. So I really mean airships when I say airships. But there's like an airship that, and it's like the time of Prohibition where it's sort of akin to when there would be boats out on like international waters with,
what was the name of this one again?
Rum Row.
Oh, I saw those guys too.
I saw everyone.
I looked at their book. I almost picked it up, but I did. At the time, I got distracted. Someone had dressed their two-year-old like Batman Beyond. Like, it was really impressive looking, and the little kid was like, Batman. Had the little wings on the back and everything, and I got super impressed and distracted, so I never ended up buying the thing. But yeah, just so funny, because I remember flipping through that book at WonderCon.
It's really colored nice, and the art's really good, but it's kind of their version of when during the times of Prohibition, where just outside of U.S. waters, there would be like all these boats with, you know, booze and stuff, and you could travel out to them or bring booze back from them and that kind of stuff. But it's all being done in
Canada, Steve. Jeez.
It's all being done in the air. So there's this gambling airship, and there's a sting operation that gets enacted. And they are also trying to not only capture this gambling, boozing airship, but also trying to capture the mysterious head woman who's in charge. But she ends up being, like, really crafty, and she's got them right where she wants them. And it's full color, but there's a 5-page backup that has a kid. It's a black-and-white story. There's a kid who's on this, like, seafaring ship who... he's got it so bad that when pirates start sneaking up the side of the boat, he basically helps them and just joins the pirates rather than stick to his current state of affairs. Also here, there's back matter with fake ads and stuff. It's a cool package. I would recommend it highly, and you can get it on Comixology. And again, nice and colorful. Real good. Rum Row.
Now I feel bad that I didn't buy it.
So Image has been putting out a lot of these $9.99 trades, and I don't think there's been one where I disliked it. Like, I think every one I said, oh, that was at least good. Like, it was some measure of quality.
Especially if you get a discount on top of that, if, like, you pre-order it or you have a sub through a shop or something, then it's too good to pass up.
So, like, I just started plowing through, like, a bunch of these, and, like, some of them, like, they're good, but I don't know if I exactly want to, like, run out and get the next one right away. So I'm always, like, waiting for one to pop or for a great one or something. So I read this Cowell, Chicago Organized Workers League, Volume 1, Principles of Power by Kyle Higgins, Alex Siegel, and Rod Reese. And this one is, wow. Like, I almost think, like, this would be, like, right out of the 80s or something. Because it just reminds me of, like, stuff like, I guess, like, Straight Toasters, Electro Assassin, you know, that Sienkiewicz
really
type of painted. Like, maybe I'm like, maybe it's been a while since I revisited like some 80s comics, but this totally like reminded me of like that sort of like painted craziness in spots. I was just like, I can't believe this is coming out. Like, it totally put me into that mood, and it sets up like its own superhero universe and everything. Where they, like, have, like, there was Heroes in the War, and then they set up, like, a union in Chicago and everything. So I was just reading through this, and it reminds me so much of some, like, indie comics I've read recently, too. Like, there was that one with, that was getting all the, it was, like, a self-published thing. Jeez, why can't I, Copra, that's what it was. So it sort of had some of that, like, the Suicide Squad type of influence, like, those type of stories. And, like, all these things just sort of came together in the story, and I'm, like, just like, wow. Like, this is one definitely I'll be, like, picking up the second volume, like, right away. It just, like, sort of just fit in there. So they have, like, all these superheroes, like, sort of, like, on a police force type of thing. But they've, like, arrested a lot, or there's not a lot of supervillains around. So you can kind of see where, like, if they were getting health benefits or whatever, it's like, well, we don't know if we really need you, or we don't know if we need to pay you as much, or those type of, like, things are going on in the background of, like, all these fights. Because there's, like, these six big supervillains, and, like, the last one's been arrested. So I guess they can still do other stuff. Like, there's still crimes being committed, but ideally, like, you want supervillains and superheroes going up against each other. Like, it's a different fight when you're just going up against regular gangsters or whatever. So they sort of get into, like, the politics of that, and there's also this, like, running thread of, well, when you confiscate, like, equipment and stuff, where does it go? Or if we're, like, improving the equipment that superheroes are using with, like, funding and everything over the years, like, where do, like, all these, like, diagrams and stuff go? And then it's like, oh, it seems like they've been stolen or something. So if, like, someone dies or something, they're like, well, I thought those were, like, secured away somewhere. And it keeps on going down this path where, like, there's, like, protests and, like, you think there's going to be a strike, and then things keep on, like, developing. And then it gets to some very interesting, like, there's a cliffhanger, and I'm like, ah, I see. Like, something I would be very into. Like, I don't want to give it away, but, like, totally matches up with my sensibilities.
I'd like to be sitting across the room reading a comic while you're reading, and then you have that, ah, I see what's happening here moment.
Well, I, you know, I totally have those, or I have those, like, I'm talking to the comics going, well, that's stupid, or I'm like, oh, that's going to come back on you. I'm, like, totally talking to this stuff sometimes. So this was totally one of those comics. I was like, I thought this was going to be good because I've heard some things about it. But then I go to read it, I'm like, well, is this going to be, like, a good, or is this going to be, like, a great, or something like that? And they also have, like...
Those are your two choices, good or great.
Well, it could be a 5-star, like something like a Casanova or something, but how often do you run into something like that? And you don't want to run into something that's bad, ideally, like. But they start out here and they have a map of Chicago. And you know how much I love maps. And they list, like, I don't know enough about Chicago if these are, like, actual neighborhoods, but, like, I would have to imagine, like, you would if they're not, like, you would definitely be influenced by, like, the actual city. But they have, like, all the neighborhoods. And there's, like, 80 different, like, locations listed. And I'm like, that is awesome. So there's some, like, back matter in here, too, with, like, confidential documents. Like, you would probably find at the police department where it, like, says restricted or confidential. And it actually, like, going into, like, the character's history, like, what they did in World War II and what they did after, some of it is actually blacked out with, like, a marker.
Huh.
So it's, like, neat stuff. That definitely recommend.
What about Phil? What have you been reading?
Well, I got Lady Mechanica number 0-5. It's by Joe Benitez.
Benitez.
Yeah, Benitez. You guys know of him?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a local guy. He's at almost every show down here. Yeah.
Is he?
I have 0, 1, and 2, and I quit when the big gap between 2 and...
Yeah. That's the thing, because the first time I noticed Lady Mechanica right before it came out was the first time I went to Fan Expo. Kevin, that must have been like 08, I imagine, 09.
Ooh, yeah, probably.
And so issue 4 and 5 just came out.
And before then, he worked for Top Cow.
Well, that's when I think that was the original label, wasn't it? Maybe?
For Mechanica?
Yes, it originally came out through Top Cow. During the hiatus is when he announced he's... No, wasn't it Aspen?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It was Aspen. He worked for Aspen because he was always at the Aspen booth. And then at some point, it seemed mutual, at least. That's what all the press releases said. He was like, oh, he's just going to do his own thing and come out with his own issues. Super talented guy. When I saw him at the shows back in the day, the problem was, like, he had a list of people who would just come for, like, these really beautiful head sketches.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were cheap. So I think he was one of those dudes that probably made a lot more money doing commission type work than he was doing a monthly.
A lot of steampunk people probably go to him.
And then additionally, I remember one time I was flipping through channels and one of those reality shows, this one was about body painting. And on the steampunk one they did, he was the guest judge. So I think he was riding that. But not that steampunk is over, but I, at least at the cons I go to, its presence is noticeably diminished. Like, there used to be a ton of panels on it. Now there's almost no panels. I mean, you still see some people dressed up, but I think that wave has crested.
Wah, don't say that.
I mean, it's still around, but, you know, like, for a while, there was always, like, a whole bunch of panels and a bunch of booths, and now there's still, you can buy the stuff and everything, but it just seems like there's less than there used to be.
I knew him from doing his pinups and covers and things along those lines, and the Lady Mechanica was when he was going to do his own book, finally. And
the original teaser poster really caught my eye. That's why I picked it up originally, because it's definitely a cool style.
I love those first few issues. It just, that big delay, and then I'll see what you're going to say, but my friends that jumped back on were like, it kind of wasn't anything. It sort of lost its way.
That's what I was actually going to say is issue 0 and 1 I really enjoyed. But after that, even 2 and 3, which came out in the past, it really fell apart for me. Like, his art's good, but his storytelling got really boring. Like, it's not that his dialogue was bad or anything. It's just it was a boring story for me. The next miniseries looks really cool because it's more like an Indiana Jones tale. So I don't think you'll be dealing with a lot of the thing that I found boring in this.
And I agree. I just read issue number 5, and I felt like, you know, his art is fantastic. His dialogue is fine, but it's the pacing. There was not enough stuff happening to showcase his art and to keep me engaged. There wasn't enough twists and turns or action sequences. And, you know, after having just read The Skies of Fire and having read The Rum Row, then when I read this also with its airships and steampunkish type vibe, it seemed to fall short. It seemed to just be a lot darker of a palette, and you know, it, like I said, it didn't feel like it, it kept me as engaged as it could have. And his artwork is beautiful. I've been a fan for a long time. So that's a shame. So, but
whatever. Like I said, the next one looks promising, though. The next one doesn't.
On his stuff at all. But it just felt kind of more like almost a pinup book at a time. And I was like, oh, I really liked it. But I have 3 issues worth of it. Like, I have plenty of it.
Well, like the circus issue. I don't know if you guys read that one. But, like, that was really reminded me of, like, a Talk Cow issue, you know, like. Like, sometimes his art, like, you could really tell that he worked at Top Cow or Aspen, you know?
Yeah, the Aspen. It made me laugh. Like I said, I was at the Valiant booth a bit, chit-chatting and meeting up with people, and they were right across from Zenoscope.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, that last issue, it could have used a little more cheesecake to keep me engaged. I would have appreciated a little bit more, but it was more, you know, the full dress in the rain in the dark kind of thing.
Yeah.
It just need if and again you just have to find out ways of making those scenes that aren't action oriented more interesting, and sometimes it is you know, with a shapely lady or two.
Yeah. But yeah, her next one will be like a journey around the world kind of thing, Indiana Jones thing. So maybe the different tone and type of story, maybe it will work better now that you're not dealing with her origin or being stuck in that one city, you know?
And also just for me, like, seeing him at all those shows, and I used to ask, and then I just stopped ask. You know, once you kind of fall off, it's not any knock against him, it's just you kind of are tired.
Well, that's the thing. If you're going to read the second one, don't read it until it's all done.
Yes.
I don't trust him at this point.
Well, I guess I don't follow a lot of Aspen, but my friend I was talking to was saying that for a while they were pretty good, but they've kind of fallen back again on their late ways, I guess.
Yeah,
just but they did just buy, I'm sure you know, they just bought Big Dog Inc.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
So that's going to be interesting because Big Dog has their amount of cheesecake, but they also have some all-ages stuff.
Yeah.
We were all kind of joking it's going to be difficult for them. They're going to need to find a way to market because Aspen was known as like the, you know, Michael Turner cheesecake stuff, not necessarily, you know, the place you'd go to think all ages books, you know, right or wrong. And so now they're going to have to find a way to rack, because, you know, books like Critter and stuff aren't, I mean, they're a little bit, but they're nowhere near as cheesecakey as Fathom or whatever you have you. I mean, not to knock Fathom for all the Fathom fans, but if you are, I guess, direct your hate mail to me.
I didn't mind Fathom. It was because he was a underwater, you know, enthusiast. Turner was, so it was his opportunity to draw underwater scenes, and the I thought that stuff was really lush. His other book, The Soul Fire, that I think is the other kind of anchor book of, because I remember Jeff Loeb did some scripting or helping design some of the stuff at the time. The other anchor of Aspen's was something more fantasy, fairy oriented, and I know it had a lot of its design work too, but I think they went out of their way to not be overly cheesecakey just because of the reputation that he had working on the Witchblade book prior to the company. I kind of thought like the company, at least to me, what I thought of was The Color, that they just went wild with their sunsets and their underwater mixes and blends of color, and that Soulfire book, like, you know, every fin on the back of the fairy's wings would be, you know, a different type of color. I just thought they really went out of their way on that end of the process to make their books.
You still get their books, Steve?
No, I haven't in a long time. I think I read that first run of Fathom when Michael Turner did it, and I didn't care for the Soulfire, although I tried the first book or two.
I read one where it was like a monster or imaginary. It was like an imaginary devil, an imaginary angel. It was kind of popular. I forget what it was called. And it followed a kid around or something like that.
Was it Kara's Magic?
No, it wasn't that one.
That was a recent one. There's some interesting stuff that's just come out, but the titles, like I said, Kara's Magic. What were some of the other titles there? But anyways, like I said, Big Dog Inc. is now part of Aspen. So if you're, didn't you buy a bunch of their stuff recently, Phil?
Yes, it was the Dorothy one, Wizard of Oz one. I forget what it was called, but it was the one mixed with Cowboys.
Yeah, I read Big Dog Inc. stuff every once in a while.
I ordered, I tried to order a bunch of their stuff, but it didn't go through for some reason.
Well, now you can check your Aspen section.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, what have you been reading?
Well, I did pick up those other two Hex 11 books. So I mentioned that. I did the quick review before, so I just wanted to say at the show I did back it up and pick up their new issues. I also picked up, do you guys know Bobby Timoney, the artist?
Yeah.
He's got a, he, I picked up, did you ever get his, like, collected book, Bobby Draw?
No.
It's kind of a fun, it's regular size, but what it is it's a collection of super short, like, 2-3 page stories and sketchbooks, which I thought was a really clever way. First of all, being regular comic size, I appreciate. And second of all, the mix of little stories and the mix of pinups is a nice, like, it's, in some ways I liked it better than just a sketchbook, you know what I mean? But this is, it's copyright 2013, so it's nothing new in it. But he drew a very nice Fozzie Bear on the inside cover.
Nice.
That I should probably scan in. But I had heard him on J.K. Woodward's Happy Hour. But the little tales are basically all kind of gag strips for the most part. And then they have a bunch of, I mean, the first one's of more like 6 pages or something. But the rest are usually like kind of 1 or 2 jokes. But there's like a really nice Kitty Pryde and Lockheed pinup, a Detective Chimp pinup. There's a great Super Cop story where it's all a bunch of bunny bank robbers. And then he has to get his dog to help. And then Donald Duck dressed as Indiana Jones as a pinup. Then there's another one where all these rabbits take over the bunnies everywhere, and it's bunnies invade the entire world. You can see why I probably bought this. And yes. Then he did a Squirrel Girl pinup, and then there's this little slightly grimmer one, short story, about a guy who gets a VD from his ex-girlfriend.
Dope.
And he kind of goes through, and they had just broken up, and that was his only, he had to get it from her because that's the only person. So the kind of notifying her and going to the doctor and going through the treatment and everything. Made it kind of interesting, and then there's a cool Popeye pinup and a Casper and Ghost Rider mashup. Ghost Rider, Spirit of Friendship, and it's Casper on a flaming tricycle with, like, a, you know, the jacket and spikes and everything.
I used to like those comics when I was a kid, Casper and all them.
Yeah, I love the Harvey comics.
Yeah, Richie Rich.
And then your favorite Universal monster, Steve, is popping up on a unsuspecting couple in a sepia tone print.
Cool, a creature.
And then, at least I think that, I'm not an expert, but he's got kind of the gills on his face, right? On the side and everything, and he's green, and I guess that's who it is. I'm not a big Universal Mighty Mouse. And just, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Like I said, I really like, if you're a sketchbook, first of all, if it's bigger size, and second of all, if it has other stuff in it, I'm always a big fan, and it makes me stop more. I just think his artwork's kind of fun. He's pretty malleable style. Good at, you know, he can mimic a lot of the stuff. He'd be perfect on, like, a Muppet book or something. That's why I had him pick a Muppet.
Hey, I've never seen the sun come up in the west.
Moving right along. Yeah, so that was something I picked up walking through the aisleways. I guess it's not, it doesn't really, I mean, there are stories in it, so it sort of counts as a comic.
Oh, sure,
I mean,
it does.
Like a comic, it's not. But I just thought that was clever. Like, so for you artist types, if you have little pieces, 1 or 2 page gags or whatever, it kind of spices up the sketchbook, I think.
I would buy those up for sure.
I love buying sketchbooks at cons. I would rather see a host of an artist's commissions from the last year than just get one, you know, print or one sketch from them.
But you can't frame it.
I know, but I just like to see the art.
Part of my problem is so many of those sketchbooks can be kind of small, not in page count, but
yeah, like I know what you mean.
They tend to be like 6x8 or some, or even tiny.
Little digest size.
Yeah. Yep. And I just liked that this was bigger sized, and so that made it seem like you can really get your head around it and really and dig it a little bit more. I also picked up Armor Hunter number 1 Harbingers with the fancy cover. They were giving those away at the booth.
That's the covers. That's the only crossover one I haven't read yet.
But I mean, you know, the inside, it's like raised on the inside.
Like a chromium cover?
Like popped out, kind
of? Yeah, but what's weird, it's the inside cover that you can feel the texture, not the outside cover.
Okay.
I guess, the thing is, having missed the 90s, I don't know a lot of the terms for these different effects that they put on. But it's like...
It's in relief. It's
like metallic shine, but it's just weird that the relief's not on the outside.
I used to like the fancy covers. I didn't buy comics just because of that, but I used to like them, like the Silver Surfer ones, how they made them all silver and pop out.
Yeah.
And this one, it's a double... It's the front and the back.
Confidential document, and like there's burn holes or something in it.
Wolverine's claw mark.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I mean, it doesn't... I don't know. It was just fun. Like, they were giving them away, so I'm like, well, I'll take one. Yeah. I'll eat it. But it just made me kind of... Like, I think for some people, that's either something they absolutely love because it's nostalgic or something they despise because they feel it's gimmicky.
It all depends if the price goes up or not. Like, if they charge the same amount as a normal issue, then it's okay, you know. But if they're going to charge you an extra dollar, then yeah, then fuss about it.
I can't. I bought a bunch of those sucker DC lenticular cover jobs. Too, but I don't think they were more expensive, were they?
Nope, they were all the same price. Yeah,
so I just...
I thought that those were $3.99 and the regular issues were $2.99. That's what the whole...
I don't remember. I remember I bought... Well, what I remember is the ones that were hot were at a lot of places commanding a premium if you bought... You know what I mean? Like, whatever. I don't remember which months, but some of the months got hotter than others. And those ones... But that was the secondary market, usually. Or LCSs that, you know, raise the price on hot comics.
Well, enough of this gimmicky stuff. Let me take you to a series where storytelling is what is driving the whole thing. And I took on a big undertaking and read over the last 4 days now all 32 issues of Terry Moore's Rachel Rising series.
Wow.
That is his current ongoing for the last couple of years here. And I... feels like it's almost wrapping up. Have either any of you guys read any of these? This book?
I started it because I loved his series before it.
The Echo one?
Yeah, but I never followed through, though. But it is one I want to get to.
Chick wakes up dead in a grave, digs herself out. She's got no memory at first. Comes back slowly. Well, at least her mortal coil's memory. Turns out she's got an old spirit within her related to an old witch hunt, and there's like a Satanish demon involved and a little girl who isn't a little girl who cuts people up like nothing. Really great creepy drama with a vibe that is what I wish iZombie had been more like. This book characterization is really good, and it is just going places where I just really need to find out what's going to happen next, but not, I don't want to get there fast because the storytelling along the way is so enjoyable and his little interludes are so creepy. Each issue is really like a chapter and it ends on these quasi pseudo cliffhangers that really are just like chapter endings. And the next issue doesn't ever, to my recollection, pick up right where the last one left off, but from another point of view and at another time. It's really cool, really well done, and it's my first time reading a Terry Moore series, so I have really enjoyed it quite a bit.
Beautiful covers, I think, too, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wish the rendering was all like that inside. And it's got, talk about the reverse black eyes, because she was strangled. She's got strangle marks on her neck, and she's got bloodshot eyes with just the white... you know, of her pupil iris, peeking through. It's pretty creepy looking.
Do you know if that series is still going or has it wrapped up yet?
Racial Rising? No, yeah. Issue 32 just came out in recent weeks, and it feels like it's marching towards its climax.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was only another 4 or 5 issues, but I have no clue. I'm new to this.
Have you tried Echo?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you gotta read that one. That one's amazing.
Kevin.
This is sort of related to the Toronto Comics Arts Festival, too, which is coming up Mother's Day week. And they always counter program Mother's Day because their show's free and nice
mothers.
Enough where you can actually bring your mother to it, too. So I should be in attendance, so I was kind
of... don't they have all kinds of, like, that kind of self-obsessed indie books about masturbating and transgression and all that?
Definitely.
Well, I don't want to bring my mom around all that. Filth.
But they also have everything else. Like, there's not just one thing.
That's your closed American mind. Here in Canada, we have freedoms.
Yeah, I know, but
like, if you want
your mom's
comics
may,
with people jerking off in it, we could do it.
Yeah, exactly. Your moms may enjoy that. I don't want my mom looking at that filth.
Anyhow. So I was looking through some of the stuff I got last year that I never talked about, and I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I should have brought some of this stuff up. Like, there's one called The Feast from Evan Palmer and Anna Bone Giovanni.
I read that one.
You read that one? Okay. And, yeah, it was just, like, a quick thing. They don't have, like, the extra sketches and stuff from the back of the print copy online.
Here's the thing. I really like the art, but I hated the panels where there was no background in it. And sometimes the way like the people looked with the white backgrounds, like I just found compared to the rest of the art, it just looked so empty.
I thought it looked kind of like Bone, like that type of cartooning. Like, I don't know. It was just very, I don't know, very comforting or something. But yeah, I can see there's definitely some panels where like there's no background. Like there's one where they're running by. And, like, the characters in the background, and they're, like, cheering. But, yeah, there is no background. And then the next panel is, like, there's, like, a creature coming after him and all these trees. So, yeah, I can see how that could be a...
Now, tell me if I read this wrong. The first page, was it a girl picking her nose, and then were they collecting it like berries? Because some of their dialogue and the things they were saying at first was kind of weird.
It could have been.
Threw me off a bit.
Well, it's like, the part where it's like a bunch of kids that are basically going out to murder like a giant in the forest, that didn't throw you off? Like they're just yelling kill, 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 and
well,
just,
that's
just
the part.
This dude.
That's the part I liked is once the giant came in.
Like it's a pretty simple story, but definitely enjoyable. But you missed out like the cool sketch stuff in the back, like they name all the characters, and it's like Fart Hunter. Secret P.
Well, that was some of the stuff I didn't like, yeah. So she Night was Screamer. Picking her nose, and they were collecting, like, berries.
Lemon Laugh, Honey Wheat, Whisper Wiggle, Daisy Poo Poo.
That's what like all the characters are called. Bad version of like the that. Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah, but they're all, like, kids, so, like, I'm not surprised. Whatever in this world, if, you know, that's going on. And it looks like they're being eaten by this monster all the time. So instead of running away again, like, they stand up and fight. And then something else from that was pretty cool is, I guess this is like an, is this like an acetate? Like the plastic?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's like the cover of this comic. It's like Sleep Spell by Jesse Monahan. I think he did some work for that Cartoon Adventure Time. But like the cover is like that sort of plastic material, but there's like drawings on it. So, like, the more detail stuff is, like, on that, and then you flip the page, and then, like, all the detail disappears, and you only see, like, the outline. It sort of shows his process. So that's kind of cool. And it's just about this guy, like, going through outer space, and he's like, yeah, he's talking to his girlfriend that he thought, oh, I thought we would have worked things out. I'm going into outer space, and... you know, I might not ever see you again. So it goes into all this other alien stuff after that. But It's just a short thing, but I thought it's kind of cool. I like his style and everything.
Cool. Phil.
Yep, I got something by Image. I think it's Image. Yeah, it's Image Comics called The Empty by Jimmy Robinson, who I believe did a comic I really like called Bomb Queen. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so he...
Did he also do the Five Weapons?
Yeah.
One? Yes, yep. I never read that one, though. But he does the art, the inking, coloring. Like, he does everything.
He's the greatest.
Yeah, yeah, he does everything. Actually, this is art is a lot different than his Bomb Queen one. Like, it's... Maybe it's the way he draws the humanoids and stuff, but it's really cool. Like, I would have never guessed that it was him that drew it.
So there won't be an omnibus?
Probably not. And it's called The Empty. And basically, it's an apocalyptic world where there's like everything's poison. So it's basically all desert, almost like an Australian outback. It has the feel of. And there's this girl, I forget her name, but she has these like big blades for arms or on her arms, like just very awkward looking. But that's what she used to fight with. And she's just wrapped in bandages and kind of ugly looking because she's full of scars and everything. And the story's mainly about her. Basically, one of the other subplots is somewhere in this other world where they have like gardens and everything. Like, it's a perfect world. They dropped one of their people for some reason on this horrible world, and she can bring plants back to life. So they're using her to, they want to use her on a journey and a quest to try and cure the poison lands. And at the same time, you're finding out the mystery of why would her people abandon her like that. So it's kind of neat. I think it'll be worth checking out once the trade is out. Right now, you're not finding a lot of mysteries. In the end of the second issue, though, she tries to heal one of the death roots, and it ends up being it clears up a bit, and it's something man-made that's poisoned, and she can't cure that. So I think it'll go more into that next issue.
This almost sounds like a pitch for that upcoming Image series Injection. I don't really know much about it, but it, like, the world's poison type of thing.
Could be. This is a very bleak world. Like,
yeah,
it has almost kind of a Bible-ish feel, I guess, a bit. Not that it's preachy or anything, but I don't know. It's neat.
Andrew, got one more?
I'll make mine super quick and be more of a teaser for you guys, but you guys know what's just come out, right? From Image Comics, a series that's had runs in short bursts, and you guys talked about it.
Luther Strode?
Oh. The Legacy of Luther Strode, issue 1.
Oh, no way.
So I picked it up. Justin Jordan, Trad Moore, Philippe Sobrero. So it's a... it's a little bit more. It's $3.99, but it is it feels extra size. Like, I have a page count, but like no ads until you get to the back. There's some covers and stuff, but just straight through that kind of crazy stream of consciousness sort of artwork, kind of not family friendly, lots of sex and violence. So not for the little kids out there, because I know we have a pretty strong listenership. But anyways, I just thought I'd, after you guys talked about it, I saw the new issue. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get in on the ground floor on one of these dig-dang things for once, instead of being Johnny late to the party, never reading nothing. So I picked up the first issue. Cool. And like I said, I'm not going to spoil it for y'all, but good. I just wanted to give a little quickie for it, because I know we're... You know, don't want to run this episode out to be 12 hours long.
I'm going to get the issues and then read them as when they finish up. All in one chunk. That's how I do it. That's how I roll. And speaking of a couple other quickies here and related to other things that we've mentioned in the past, I mean, I think when I prepare for the show, I think about what indie stuff I've been reading, and a lot of times it is often stuff that I've already mentioned on the show, but it's still indie stuff that I've been reading, but it's still good. Like, Sidekick is on issue number 10, just came out, of 11, and that is written by J.M. Straczynski with art by Tom Mandrake. Series totally coming full circle, getting I mean, we've seen the superhero sidekick deconstruction story told before in a number of ways, and this one has really been entertaining, and it is, you know, gory and mature, and it is a really enjoyable read, even though the subject matter gets so crazy. It's just kooky enough that it stays comic booky rather than being particularly unpleasant. It's nice and comic book colorful. It's a great book, Sidekick. And The Private Eye from the Panel Syndicate, the one where you can choose your own price on panelsyndicate.com from Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin. The Private Eye number 10 of 10 finally came out. That series is wrapped up, and what a visual tale that was. That certainly paid off, and every chapter was really enjoyable on its own and together as a whole series. The Graveyard Shift, number 4 of 4, came out, written by Jay Farber, with pencils, inks, and colors all by Fran Bueno. And that book is just beautiful to look at, and it's a nice, engaging plot that would make a good episode of a vampire drama, or potentially the first part of a vampire movie, if you will. But that was the one.
Twilight.
That was the one with the girlfriend who ends up getting turned, and but she's still trying to be with the guy, and he's trying to figure out a way to turn her and not have her be influenced by the vampires who have control of her due to lineage and all that sort of stuff, and it has kind of a nightclub angle to it. It was good. And the last is the second issue of The Mad Mummy came out by Mike Vosburgh from Asylum Press that you can get on Comixology because it's a landscape comic there. And again, the mummy, he's cursed to wander the world for eternity. He's trying to make the best of it, and he's enjoying the warm weather living in a quiet suburb of LA until shit goes sideways for him. It's very entertaining, and it may be, it's right up there with my favorite work of Mike Vosburgh, who I didn't always appreciate as much as I should have when he was working for Marvel, but I certainly have enjoyed his indie stuff quite a bit since. So there you go. There's a foursome for you. Phil, why don't you bring us home with one last book?
One last, okay.
Or one last opportunity.
Have you guys, I guess you guys haven't read Goners?
No.
It's by Image also, actually, and there's 6 issues out. Beautiful covers, and in this world, the supernatural exists in our real world, like everyone knows about it. And there's a family who generations have basically been protecting the world. And the latest generation, they exploited it and used it to make reality shows and stuff like that. And this story basically is the end of this family. Like the parents are killed in the first issue. And so basically it's about their 2 kids trying to survive. And I guess eventually they'll end up taking over. And it's a pretty neat, fun kind of adventure type story. But I remember hearing something, I think it was for this comic, it was described as Goonies at one point, mixed with something else, and I definitely did not get that feel at all for Goonies, which I was a little disappointed about. And I found it was mostly the covers that kept me to keep buying it.
Well, they both start with a G.
Yeah.
Now, what about Gremlins?
So, yeah. And some of the character designs were really weird, some of the monsters, but it was still a neat little story. I got a little bored near the end once they started explaining things a bit. So I don't know what that tells you, but
cool. All right, gang, that's episode 359 of Indie Comic Book Noise. You can find us over on our Facebook page and bug us on Twitter from there. And thanks for joining me again, gang. Let's do this again sometime soon.
Next week?
Sounds good to me.
All right.
It's a promise.
Spring has sprung. Celebrate new life by trying some new indie comics, even for you guys up there in Canada.
Still snow on the ground.
Later.
Baby snakes.
Late at night is when they come out.
Baby snakes.
Sure you know what I'm talking about. Make it win. They make the best kind of pet.
Baby
snakes. And there's a couple right near me.
Baby snakes.
Maybe I think they can probably hear me. They can wait. I'll take all I can get. Baby
snakes.
than a ho ho a ho ho ho. That is usually empty.
Usually empty.
Tiny too.
They live by a ho ho a ho a ho ho a ho. That is usually senti, which stands for
Sighted Motion Picture and Television Engineer.
From maybe